Okay, let's unpack this feeling. I think, we've all been there. That deep frustration of having a really clear insight into one of your own bad habits. That emotional hole in the street you keep falling into. But then the insight is just completely useless when the moment hits. You know exactly why you shouldn't fall in. You see the edge coming, and then there you go again.
That gap, that space between knowing and doing, that's exactly why we need a system for change, not just, another label for the problem. And that's what this deep dive is all about. We're looking at the Mind Matrix Model, or MMM, which really provides that system. It's a practical framework, a map,
It's a
basically.
map for your own mind.
Yeah, a map that charts your mind as this dynamic living landscape.
So the mission here isn't just self-awareness, which is great, but it's about tactical agency.
That's a great way to put it.
We're getting a blueprint for how the internal gears actually turn so we can, influence the mechanism instead of just watching it break down again.
Precisely. You have to understand the architecture to pick the right tool at the right time. And what's so crucial to get right from the start is that MMM is specifically not a diagnosis.
Okay, that's important.
It's not about labeling you. It's about mapping your patterns. And if you can map the pattern, you can start to foster what the sources call equanimity.
That internal steadiness.
Exactly. That composure that lets you handle challenges with more resilience and, frankly, with more grace.
So let's get into that architecture, the map itself. It starts with what the model calls the three selves.
Yes, the vital, the heart, and the head.
And before we even define them, I think we have to stress the most empowering part of this whole idea. These are described as flexible modes.
That emphasis is everything. They are state-dependent operating styles, not fixed personality traits.
That's just a huge relief.
It's a massive relief because it means you are not defined by your momentary reactive pattern. When you see them as modes that can shift and respond, it increases your agency and it strips away all that stigma that comes with feeling stuck.
Okay, so let's start at the base layer then, the foundation of the house, which would be the vital self.
The vital self. This is your physical energy-based domain. Its job is all about body-based regulation, instinct, and that critical survival to thrive function.
And it's primarily governed by the autonomic nervous system, the ANS.
That's the one. The ANS is like the master control panel for your physical readiness.
So it's deciding, am I safe enough to rest, or do I need to launch into action?
Absolutely. And we see this function along what's called the vital axis. On one end, you have the parasympathetic mode, that's rest, recovery, digest,
The calm state.
the calm state. And on the other end, the sympathetic mode, stress, action, alertness, what we think of as fight or flight.
And it's a spectrum, not a switch.
A total spectrum. The sources show it moving from hyperarousal, which is, collapse, that deep numbness or shutdown, through the middle, which is the regulated state, all the way over to hyperarousal, agitation, panic, that chronic fight or flight feeling.
So stress. When stress isn't released, it becomes the pressure cooker for the vital self.
Exactly. Stress is just the body's natural response to a challenge. But if it doesn't complete its cycle, if it doesn't release, the vital self gets stuck. The sources describe chronic anxiety as a fire under the pot of your nervous system.
How's that?
You're not in an emergency, but your body is just perpetually simmering, ready to discharge an energy that has nowhere to go. And that keeps you locked in that hyper-aroused state.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so moving up from that physical foundation, we get to the heart self, the core of connection.
Yes, the heart self domain is emotion, attachment, belonging, boundaries, all of our relational processing. If the vital self asks, am I safe? The heart self is asking, do I belong?
And its axis runs between two modes, introversive and extroversive.
It does. The introversive mode is an inward relational focus. This is someone who processes emotions internally. They might prefer depth in a few relationships, and they hold back until they really feel understood.
And extroversive is the opposite.
The outward orientation. They're expressive, social. They process by talking things through, by connecting with others.
Now, when the heart self is in pain or in a negative state, this is where we see some really intense protective patterns, like what the model calls narcissist mode and echoist mode. Those are loaded terms.
They are.
How does MMM use them as modes, not diagnoses?
It frames them as two different protective responses to the same core pain, not feeling emotionally seen or met. The narcissist mode turns the attention outward excessively. It's an overattendance to your own needs to get external validation, to control the situation, and stabilize a very fragile sense of self.
Projecting strength to protect a vulnerability.
Exactly. And the echoist mode is the mirror image of that pain.
So they turn inward.
Inward and withdraw.
Mm.
This mode minimizes its own needs, it focuses on pleasing others, and it sort of believes that staying small or quiet is the safest way to keep a connection and avoid being rejected.
Both are just survival strategies.
At their root, absolutely.
Mm.
They're just different strategies for dealing with a perceived relational threat. It's so powerful to reframe them that way, not as character flaws.
Okay, so from the body and the heart, we get to the top floor. Head self.
Our meaning-making center, thoughts, beliefs, planning, all of our models of the world.
This is where we strategize.
Yes, and its axis runs between the holistic mode and the analytic mode. Holistic is about the big picture, intuition, metaphor.
System-level thinking.
Right. Mm-hmm. And analytic mode is logic, details, facts, linear planning, step-by-step.
I thought the source's example of how this shows up in our prosody, in our voice, was just fascinating.
It's a brilliant, non-obvious point.
It's not just what you say, but how you sound.
Exactly. When someone's in analytic mode, their voice tends to be very steady, factual, measured, not a lot of pitch variation.
Mm.
But when the holistic mode is running, the voice gets more musical, more emotionally inflected, the rhythm changes to connect ideas.
So true balance isn't choosing one over the other.
Not at all.
It's being able to shift. If I'm doing a budget, I need analytic. If I'm brainstorming, I need holistic.
Exactly. But that ability to shift and how well all three of these cells function is governed by the overall weather system of the mind.
Which MMM calls state.
State, yes.
So we have these three operating systems, but how they run depends entirely on the atmosphere they're in. What is state?
State is the global condition. That's a huge spectrum, but we can generally talk about the positive, balanced state versus the negative, reactive state.
And in that positive state, the system is flexible, resources are available, everything is working pretty smoothly.
Right, but that crossover point from positive to negative is critical. When you're in a positive state, your interpretation of the world is biased toward growth, curiosity, learning.
You can see nuance.
But the second you cross into the negative state, the bias flips completely to threat. The system becomes rigid, defensive.
And this is the key neuroscience point that explains why, you know, reasoning fails you right when you need it most.
The moment of reaction, yes.
Yeah.
When the system detects a threat, and it could be a real physical threat or a symbolic one, like a major criticism or a financial worry.
Right.
The brain automatically redirects resources. Your prefrontal executive capacity, which handles complex decision-making, perspective-taking, impulse control, it gets significantly reduced.
It's like the main power grid dims to turn on the emergency lights.
Perfect analogy.
And you can't run complex software on an emergency light. Your thinking brain is literally starved for resources.
The system is built for fast survival, not for nuanced reflection. Which means if we want to change a behavior, we first have to change our state. And that brings us to the internal management system for all this, the kingdom metaphor.
Okay, the internal governance. At the very center is the conscious self, our executive agent. MMM calls this the monarch.
The monarch is your conscious awareness. It's the seat of reflection, of stewardship. But the monarch can't run everything manually. It would be exhausting.
It needs automation.
It relies on automation. And those are the three ministers, the vital, heart, and head ministers. They're the unconscious management systems for each self, running all the efficient background operations.
And the ministers use scripts to do that.
Yes. And scripts are just these automated, learned patterns. They're mostly neutral or helpful. Things like, you know, driving a car, tying your shoes, social norms. They reduce cognitive load.
But when the system flips into that negative state, these helpful scripts can transform into something else.
They become specialized protective mechanisms we call sentries.
The castle guards.
The castle guards. They get activated by a perceived threat, and they're often running on old, outdated learning from past environments. So their protective action can be totally mismatched to what's actually happening right now.
And we see them in those three basic defensive postures: advance, recede, or hold.
Across all three cells, yes.
Let's dig into those sentries, because this is key to the reactive loops we all get stuck in.
Okay, so vital sentries are the most fundamental. They respond to threats to your physical self. Advance is fight, recede is flight, and hold is freeze or collapse.
So a classic vital self loop would be that wired and tired pattern. How does that cycle work?
That's a great example. It's often a cycle between the fight-flight activation, that's hyperarousal, and then the collapse or freeze, which is hyperarousal, when the body just runs out of gas.
So you get panic and agitation.
Followed by deep fatigue, numbness, lethargy, because the system is just burning all its energy on defense.
Okay, What about heart centuries? The protectors of belonging.
These are our emotional protective patterns. So, for example, withdrawing into silence. That's a heart recede century. You're trying to find safety by getting small.
And the opposite.
An advanced century might be overly controlling or appeasing someone, you know, sacrificing what you know to be true in your head just to keep the peace and avoid relational loss.
It's that moment where you know you should speak up, but something just clamps down and you stay silent because conflict feels like a threat to the connection itself.
Exactly. The century's logic is old. Conflict equals abandonment, so silence equals safety. And then your head self has to try and rationalize it later.
Finally, the head centuries. These are mental defenses against uncertainty.
Right. These are our relentless mental loops. The inner critic, or just classic overthinking, is an advanced century.
It tries to control the future.
By criticizing every possible move, it obsesses over details, creates analysis paralysis, all to avoid the pain of uncertainty or failure.
And the recede century of the head.
That would be the distraction century or the drifter. You avoid mental discomfort by scattering your attention, focusing on trivial things, procrastinating.
And the hold.
Perseveration. Getting stuck in a thought loop, playing the same thing over and over. And the crucial distinction here is that head centuries are negative thoughts that speak as if they are the monarch's voice.
So they say, you blew it. This is impossible.
You're not smart enough. Yeah.
Realizing that that harsh internal voice isn't you, but it's a century trying to protect you, that feels like a huge moment of agency.
It's the hinge point. It shifts the whole thing from I'm deficient to I'm running an automated protective response that just needs an update. It's running on old software.
So if the negative state activates these centuries and takes the monarch offline, what is the fundamental sequence for change in this model? How do we start?
The core rule is non-negotiable. It guides the entire process.
Yeah.
And it is. Regulate first, then reflect.
That's a bottom-up approach. You have to stabilize the energy before you can deal with the emotion or the belief.
That's exactly right. The system has to stabilize the vital self's arousal level first, get a baseline of safety and groundedness before the monarch can even begin to successfully work with the heart and head.
If your body is still in fight or flight, trying to analyze your deepest beliefs is...
It's like trying to have a nuanced conversation during a car crash. Reasoning will fail every time.
Okay, so once we get that regulation, even just a small window of stability, how does the monarch actively update those centuries? This is the reflective catalyst role.
Right. It requires interrupting that automated script in real time.
Yeah.
The monarch's process has four key steps. First, you have to notice the century activating. That clench in your stomach, the surge of anxiety, the critical thought.
Just the noticing.
Just noticing. Second, you pause. Even for a single breath, you engage a simple override strategy, like a deep exhale or feeling your feet on the floor.
That pause creates the space for the monarch to get back online.
Exactly. Third, you orient to the present reality. You ask, is the threat actually here and now, or is this an old memory? That shifts your focus from internal chaos to external groundedness.
And fourth.
Fourth, you consciously choose an override strategy. Maybe it's box breathing. Maybe it's naming five things you can see. A simple boundary tapping exercise. Something concrete.
And it's the repeated practice of this four-step sequence that gradually updates the century.
Yes. The goal is never to defeat the century. It's trying to help you. The goal is to retrain it, to help it update its threat assessment so it matches your actual present-day reality. That's what builds state flexibility.
This is such a usable framework. Before we wrap up, what are the primary self-mapping steps people listening can start using this week?
Okay, three things. Start by tuning in. First, ask yourself, which self is driving right now? Are you noticing body sensations and energy shifts? That's your vital self. A strong relational pull to withdraw or control. That's heart. Stuck in a mental loop. That's your head.
Okay. And second?
Second, what state am I in? Am I in threat bias, feeling rigid? Or am I in growth bias with more flexibility and clarity? Just notice.
And the third is the guiding principle?
Regulate first, then reflect. Always prioritize settling your system physically and emotionally before you try to analyze anything. And remember, the big insight here is that these modes are changeable. They are not character defects.
That's the perfect lead into our final thought. We talked about how symbolic overload, the constant fire hose of dramatic news, scary images, social media comparison can keep our vital self in a chronic low-level negative state.
Yeah, the mind matrix model is very clear that the unconscious parts of our system often can't tell the difference between a real threat and a symbolic one on a screen.
Hmm.
The stress response is the same.
So if avoiding all the negative is basically impossible in the modern world, then maybe we have to double down on actively feeding the system positive symbols of safety and meaning.
I love that. It's an active process.
It's an active process, making intentional choices, putting up art you love, surrounding yourself with natural objects, carefully curating what you listen to, like nature sounds or calming music.
You're creating an intentional symbolic landscape. One that sends repeated subtle messages to your nervous system.
I am grounded. I am safe. I belong.
Exactly.
And that active conscious choice, not just avoiding the bad, but intentionally incorporating the good, that's a powerful, practical step that starts the work of regulation right now, without needing perfect insight or waiting for the centuries to just go away.
A blueprint for agency.
Thank you for walking us through it.